Hello everyone, welcome back to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Today we have another really interesting topic. We're talking about creative crossroads. And initially I was going to set this up as a conversation about whether or not you are afraid of changing your art style. And as I started to think about it, I realized that this could be a much bigger conversation, not just about a change in your art style, but possibly a change in your business or even a change in your life, because it's inevitable that we are all going to reach a point where we are wanting to mix it up and what we are currently doing isn't what we'd love to be doing. So that's the topic today, but before we get into that, we are going to just head into our studio news, or whatever we want to call it, our little artsy chat, and then we'll move into the main topic.
Hello, Laura. How are you going?
I'm going to try and say something other than I'm good.
There's nothing wrong with being good, you know.
I reckon that I have said I'm good for about 150 plus episodes.
It's good to be good.
Yeah, and on the whole, I am pretty good, and today is no different. It's interesting because this week is our first week with the kids back at school, so it's a bit of a change up in approach. And I mentioned this on an Instagram story just the other day. I was talking about how it's a mixture of feelings, because there's a bit of sadness that the summer has come to an end, and we had a really lovely summer doing various things with the kids. But then there's also a sense of relief, because particularly, I don't know if you feel this, but for me, the last few weeks I have been back working quite a bit, and there's always that feeling of guilt. And I know there's been a few occasions where you've taken the kids to the beach to do something like that, but I've felt a bit of pressure, because when you are running a creative business, 6-7 weeks, which is the length of the summer break, it's a long time, and there comes a point where you do have to get back into the swing of things. And our kids are at that kind of in-between age. Like, they're not adults yet, but they're like almost like little mini adults are on the way to that. So we can leave them at home for a bit. We can let them go about their business, but they're growing into that role. So they're still not that great at it. And, you know, for our son, it might mean eating snacks all day rather than a meal or something like that. So anyway, we get back into term time now, and it's a different kind of chaos in a way.
You said our son eats snacks instead of meals. I would come home from work and he'd be at home and the place would be wrecked, you know, there'd be packets of chips everywhere and all this kind of stuff. And I'm saying, is that all you ate? Like, I haven't taught him how to cook. I haven't taught him how to do that kind of stuff yet. I'm blaming him for it, you know?
Well, I blame him, because I showed him how to use the toasty maker. I showed him how to use the air fryer. We had a few lessons over the holidays in how to make a meal. But as I said, they're learning this stage, or this part of living. But our daughter is very good. She's older and she's quite good at, you know, managing herself and all that comes with it. Although this morning I think everyone was just in a spin, because when I left there was dishes on the couch, there was clothes on the dining table, there was shoes all over the hallway. It just looked like there'd been some kind of whirlwind of trying to find the right things. So, as I said, a different kind of chaos.
Yeah, and that's after I'd cleaned up, because I make the lunches and do the breakfast. They can make that mess in 5 minutes flat. As they're running out the door, they can make that mess.
Exactly. I thought that the place was under control, and then just as I left, it was out of control. It can happen in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to getting back into a little bit more of a rhythm with things. I do find that the term time helps with having a structure, particularly in our art business. But I do want to grab onto some of those relaxed feelings and approaches that we had in the summer holidays. And I think we all go through this with the summer. We think about how can we keep that summer feeling going.
I just want people to know it's still summer. It's just the summer break for the school is over.
Yes, yes. And a lot of people listening to this are on the other side of the world. So they are in winter and are not experiencing this big summer break with their kids at home. But yes, it's still summer, but the kids are back at school. And one of the things that I would really like to keep up is reading. I want to keep doing some reading. And I know in previous episodes of this podcast, I've gone through phases of reading and sharing some approaches with that, like just reading 10 minutes a day, those sorts of things. And just this last week, I started using a new app on my phone. So this was an app that I saw on an Instagram post by Lisa Congdon, an artist, and she talked about how she was using this app called ClearSpace. So what it is an app where you can set up limits around your social media use. So you can set times when you can access an app freely, which was good for me because I do use Instagram for work. So there are times when I do need to be able to be on Instagram for a certain amount of time and share stories or upload reels and things like that. And I wanted to separate out that time from the time that I just spend scrolling for personal reasons. And this is the only app that I've ever seen that really enables you to do that, because you can create these windows where it's okay for you to go in and use the app. So I had to think about what windows would be good for the art business. So I quite often like to go in and post a reel between 8 and 10 in the morning. And sometimes I like to do a little check-in in the afternoon, and that's also the time when I'll often share stories. So I consider that to be work. So these windows, you can just go in and use the app freely. But then in the other periods of time, you can set up these limits. So you can only access the app, let's say, 3 times outside of those windows, and you can set time limits. So it could be a little 5-minute, 10-minute, or 15-minute check-in with the app, or scrolling, and I think it can be up to 30 minutes. And so this is a way of kind of saying, this is when I'm going to use the app for work, and then when I'm not working, I'm going to limit myself to 3 pickups and check-ins for entertainment, and I'm going to set time limits around those of 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or 30 minutes. And there's a breathing exercise. It's a very short breathing exercise. It basically just says, take a breath and think about whether or not you want to use the app at this time. And then you get those 3 opportunities to use it. I think you can customize it. You can set up more if you want, but I chose 3. So anyway, this app I've been using this past week and I'm enjoying it. I tried another app like this and it just didn't work. I set it up in my phone because you can do the same thing within your phone. And I just ignore those reminders. You know, you've spent an hour on Instagram. It became so automatic for me to just skip past that, that it had no purpose whatsoever. In fact, I was like infuriated by it. I was like thinking to myself, I really need to take this off because it's pointless. But this app that I'm using now does actually get me thinking more, and it fits in better with the way that I use Instagram. And you can set it up for other apps as well. So anyway, that's a long story to get to the point of more reading.
I just can't believe they put in an Eastern philosophy like the sacred pause into an app. You know, stop, take a breath. Is this what you want to do or say or act? I'm blown away by that. That's great.
Yeah, and I think that's what's made the difference between using this app and other apps, which just come up and it feels like an annoying message that's easily ignored. But there's something about the way that this one says, hang on a minute, take a breath. Is this what you want to be doing with your time right now? And so there have been times when it's come up and I've said no, because I'm like, actually, what am I doing? I don't need to be checking Instagram right now. And one of the things that I wanted to do was also make sure that I wasn't using Instagram at times like when I should be cooking dinner. And I mean, it sounds funny, but that would be something that would happen. Like I'd have had a work day and I want to unwind and stuff, but then I get stuck scrolling and time just disappears and I haven't done what I wanted to do. So I set it up so that I can go on at 8 p.m. So I can't go on between like 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. because I need to be doing other things around, you know, daily life. So I'm loving that. It got me thinking about what could I be doing in the time that I'm not on Instagram. And I went into my phone, and it's always a fright when you see how long you spend on your phone per day. I was thinking, what else could I be doing with this time? Whether that be reading, exercising, cooking. And I settled into this idea that I really would like to read more because I find reading very relaxing.
Not exercising and cooking, no.
Yeah, I quickly dismissed that. I was like, exercising, skip.
Yeah, no.
Cooking, skip. Reading I can do.
So, Richie, we need to talk about cooking.
So I've been getting back into reading, and one of the books that I picked up while we were away recently, so we were on a weekend away in the Barossa Valley, went to this lovely little bookshop, and there was this book that was really appealing to me. I don't know whether it was just the cover, I just felt like I wanted to read it, and it's called What You Are Looking For Is in the Library, and it's a Japanese, it was written by a Japanese person, and it's been translated into English. And it's a collection of short stories. When I realized that we were having this conversation about creative crossroads, I couldn't believe it because this book is about crossroads in life. So every person in the book has reached a point of, I guess, dissatisfaction with their lives, and they want to make some decisions. Some of them don't even realize that they want to make those decisions, but then it becomes obvious through the little interactions that the people have with the librarian. So each character in the book ends up at this library, and the librarian gives them a few books to read in relation to a topic that they're interested in. But the librarian also gives them one other book, which is just based on what the librarian has picked up about their particular situation. And in the book, you'll hear about people who are wanting to start a business. They want to change careers. They want to find more purpose in their lives. And so it's a brilliant book to read in relation to this topic. It really fired up my thinking on creative crossroads. So I'll link it in the description. One of the points in the book was that you can have a parallel career. And this was really interesting to me because the scenario was that there is a character in the book who works in the accounts department but has a passion for antiques and wants to set up some kind of selling antiques business. And for years he had felt that it was one or the other, that he would need to quit his job in order to have an antique shop. And the librarian introduces him to this idea that there are people out there that have two passions that are equally important to them. One of them isn't a side hustle. They are two important passions. There's a good chance that one of them will make more money. So one might be the primary income, but it doesn't mean the other one is of lesser importance. And so I was thinking about this, and it took me a few days before I realized that you are a perfect example of someone who has parallel careers. You work with me in this art business as a photographer, videographer, editor, full-time job. And you are also very active in boxing, and you're a coach at a gym, you work for the UFC, you do all sorts of different things, you train people in hand wrapping, all sorts. And they are your two big passions, yet they are quite separate. So I'm interested to know whether or not you've ever had any thoughts about whether you had to choose one, any kind of tips on having two passions?
Now, I never thought I would have to choose one or the other, but I often used to, not anymore, but I used to war with the idea, how can I make boxing and my creative work the same? Because exactly what you said, I would judge how successful I was at both by how much money I brought in. And it wasn't until recently, and when I say recently, I'd say about 4 years ago, I realized that I would always judge something that I did based on what it did for me. So in a selfish way, how good am I as a boxing coach? How much money do I make? How good am I as a videographer, a photographer, a filmmaker, a producer? By how much money do I make? How much do you need me in this business? And somewhere about 4 years ago, I got the opportunity to work for a massive company in boxing, a huge multinational company. And the realization hit me that I would do this for free. I don't need the money to do this. So I'm kind of lucky in a way that I can balance both really, really easily. And I'll say this now, boxing does not feel like work to me. Sometimes, especially yesterday when I was editing that reel, it felt like work. I didn't want to do it. And I had to deliver it. I had to deliver you some content and I didn't want to do it. And I never feel like that with boxing.
So I guess what we're pondering or saying is that for some people, it may be the right decision to continue in a job that provides income and security and stability, and then have their art or creative world or sport or whatever it is that they are interested in as a more passionate endeavor or something that is an outlet and doesn't have the same pressure on it to make an income. And we're often taught to utilize our job so that eventually we can make the leap into full time. So your situation is a great example of this, where the best option for you was to keep the work that often does feel like work, let's be honest. I'm often, you know, asking things of you that you wouldn't necessarily want to do in your spare time, and then to have your boxing as something on the side. Well, it's not on the side, it's just a different aspect of your life, but the goal is never to make it full time.
I have a friend whose partner sells trinkets at markets, and she absolutely loves it. She lives for it, and she doesn't make a lot of money. She might break even, she might do this. Sometimes he's asking me for advice, you know, how do you make more money at this? Like, how can she go full time? How can you quit your job and do this? And it's only now, like having this conversation with you, I'm like, why put that pressure on you? Do you enjoy doing it? You know, I just got a message from my cousin, Noel, who visited us last week. He just sent me a message yesterday and he was talking about his son. And his son does boxing. And they want, his coaches are saying, look, we want him to go into competition. We want him to do this. He's quite promising. So Noel sends me this message. What do you think? The reason I'm asking you this is because he gets really nervous and he says he just wants to do it for fun. But all these people are saying he's really good and he has potential. So I just texted him back. Let him do it for fun. Let him do it for fun. If it grows, it grows. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Just do it for fun.
I love that. I think that's the first message we want to get across in this conversation, is that it's okay to do something for fun. We see so many messages out there encouraging us to make more, to monetize things, to increase our income, to grow our audience. And it's easy to get caught up in that being the only option, that the goal is to turn this into a profitable business. But it's not the only option. There are other possibilities. So that's one example. I wanted to chat about a few other scenarios or crossroads that might come up in a creative life. So another possibility is that you are fairly entrenched in a particular style of work. So I'm thinking about someone who's been making art for many years. Maybe they've been making abstract art. They have a big follower base. They've been making a good income from it. But there's something inside of them that's really wants to experiment with something else. And maybe they've started doing that. So perhaps they're interested in tackling a different art genre. It could be realism, something really different to what they've been doing. And this is something that I see all the time, because it's natural for us to want to experiment. And sometimes something gets really popular and it has this own energy that's not even our own. You know, we get pulled on this path because we're getting a lot of validation, a lot of likes, and suddenly we're known for this thing, this abstract art or some other type of art. And we haven't actually had a lot of time to go deep and process what we really want as an artist. And we're already on this whirlwind. And that can bring up a lot of discontent and confusion inside, because we are not necessarily feeling that kind of art. And there are other things that we aspire to, other things that we admire. Sometimes people are creating art that they're not even really feeling that proud of, and yet other people lap it up. But inside there's this feeling of, it doesn't feel satisfying or rewarding, I guess is what I'm getting at. So this can be tricky. This can be tricky to navigate. I always think that if there's an itch, that you should scratch it. If you are interested in a different field, if you want to try a different approach in your art business, it might even be a shift in, perhaps you've been teaching art and now you want to teach the business side of things. It could be a shift in your business approach. I think it's always a good idea to tease it out, test it, share it, talk about it. And in that, there's even an opportunity. There's an opportunity to engage with your existing audience around this shift that you are feeling, because many people will relate to it and understand it. Inevitably, if you move in a completely different direction with your art, you will lose some followers. That is to be expected. And a big part of it is working on your mindset around that and valuing your own enjoyment and satisfaction more than the enjoyment and satisfaction of others, really putting your own needs as an artist first.
Imagine you were having this conversation with one of your children, and it was your son or your daughter, and you're like, I want to try singing instead of the guitar, but I'm afraid that if I do that, people won't like me anymore. Like, what would your answer be to your child? Absolutely do what you want to do, regardless of what people think. But yet we don't speak to ourselves like that. The fear is real.
We do attach a lot of importance to what others think. And there are ways that you can slowly share aspects of what you are doing. It doesn't have to be, one day I did this, the next day I'm doing this, unless you want it to. Like, it's up to you. You know, you can also be really honest, and that in many ways will certainly get attention. and intention, as I say, no such thing as
bad publicity.
Bad publicity. But otherwise you can gently introduce some of this newer work and transition your audience over through conversation, explaining why you're making that change, sharing some of the background to it. There are ways that you can sort of drip feed it through. I often get asked whether or not you should create separate Instagram accounts or social media accounts. So if you are a painter and you are going to start doing some pottery or ceramics, should you split them out? Or similarly, if you have two very different styles, like what we mentioned earlier, abstract versus realism, should you have separate accounts for those? And my answer to that, and this is my personal opinion, but my answer to that is almost always no. I think that it is very challenging to run two accounts, and often there is an interesting crossover and an opportunity there where you share both things, and you might end up with some of the people that initially didn't think that they would be into your new stuff, they might be down the track as they start to get used to it. And if you start a separate account, you really are limiting your pool a lot, you know, because it is hard to grow on Instagram, especially if you have an established account. So you might have over 50,000 followers. And if you decide, oh, that's no good, I'm not going to use that account anymore because that account is only focused on this type of art. All the people that follow me, they want this type of art. I'm just going to get really down because I'm going to see a lot of drop off as people unfollow me. But I think that you might be missing out on opportunities, because in that 50,000, there is bound to be a group. It might be small, it might be 5,000, but it's still 5,000 people that are interested in your realism. Now, if you start a new account, you're starting from zero. You don't even have that 5,000. And over time, as you begin to share more and you open up conversations and you refine your new approach, that 5,000 might turn into 10,000. And then you're also adding more to your account. So I don't feel like you need to have separate accounts unless it is something really, really different. So in your case, if you were sharing aspects of the art business on a social media account, maybe sharing your videography and photography and things like that, and then you had your boxing account, you probably would keep them separate.
Could you imagine people who are into sunsets and, you know, beautiful abstract art, and then me just dropping in a video of some bloody, messy combat sport type thing? Yeah, it just wouldn't work. But I remember when we had that conversation, and I started out adamant, no, you have to separate it. And about 5 minutes into the conversation, I was like, no, you'd be absolutely crazy to separate it. Why would you ignore the people who like you already? You know, if people are following you because they like your style, there's a very good chance they will like whatever avenue you decide to change into, unless it's a crazy change. Like if you're an abstract artist and then all of a sudden you fall in love with renovating cars, like people aren't going to want to watch you rebuilding an engine. But if you take a turn into, let's say, origami, they might follow you into that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, as long as the difference, as you said, isn't massive.
There does need to be some kind of thread, because I have seen quite a few artists split out their accounts and then go back and merge them back together, because it is difficult these days starting a new account. And I do feel like it's a real challenge and a juggle. And you can't underestimate the work involved in managing multiple accounts. Or at least I feel this way. I don't have any secondary account. Some people will have a secondary account for their podcast. And I understand that. But again, I just don't have the bandwidth for that. And I prefer to just mush everything together. So I guess I just sit in the mush everything together camp. And you can see that with my art. My goodness, my art has been on a wild ride since I started. I've never changed my account. I have gone from painting big, bright, abstracts. I even used to do like little whimsical characters. I went through quite a whimsical stage. I moved from bright colors into more muted, earthy colors. I moved into botanical art. I've done all sorts, collage. I've been all over the place with my art. And I have always talked about it a lot, shared different inspiration points, and opened up conversations about the challenge of loving lots of things and feeling sometimes like I don't have a really strong, defined style. In many ways, I don't think it's really hindered me. Maybe that's because my focus is on teaching different processes. It could be different if I was focused on being in galleries. I'm not sure, but I can't imagine having multiple accounts for different things. Imagine if I had different accounts for all the different types of art.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like, imagine you were to create a new account when you've discovered your art style. You know, all of a sudden you look back at your account and you say, I'm not happy with that stuff. So rather than curating your page, you just start a whole new account. You can't, I don't know. I just think you're crazy turning your back. So let's say you have 10,000 people. And the example you gave was, let's say you want to go from teaching classes on how to paint to maybe business classes. Now, there's two, like that's a massive change. It's a massive change, A, in the format of what you want to deliver, and B, the cost. And if you introduce that to your 10,000 people, a lot of them aren't going to be interested, and some of them may be quite vocal about it. Now, does that mean you stop? Just to keep those vocal people happy, I think I'll create a new page, and then I'll only have people that want to do the business on that page. And you're going to try and send people to your page, because that's what you're going to have in your head. It'll be simple. I've got 10,000 people. I'll just put a post up saying, if you want to do my business class, go to my business page. Whereas they're not going to go over. People are too busy. They're too busy scrolling. They're not going to go over. You have to get them from your feed. So you're going to have to sacrifice something if you want to push through and do your business course. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And you've brought up some really good points because it is an extra step to go over to another page. And we're just not into extra steps these days. We want everything to be immediate. We're living in a very fast-paced world. The other thing that you mentioned was the pushback. And that pushback can be harsh, and especially early on in the transition. It gets easier as people begin to accept that you've moved into this new area. But there may be some comments that can be derailing, especially if you are in that situation where you've been offering things at a certain price point and then you move into a signature course or a mastermind or something business focused that is in the thousands, where perhaps what you've been offering has been, you know, $30, $50, $100, and now we're talking $2,000. Like, that's a big, big shift. And there are people who will say things around that. And it's just being mindful that that will happen. Having support. I would highly recommend having a support group or people who are doing something similar in this, in their business, that you can chat about, because you are not alone. Anyone making these transitions will experience some comments and pushback. And the same goes for art style. There will be people who will say, I liked what you did before better. Like, and they might say it like that, or they might say it in an even nastier kind of way. So that will happen, but we have to try not to focus on the minority. We have to remember that it's not everyone, and that there are still people within your audience who are more excited about this change and love seeing you grow and develop, and try and attach more importance to those comments. It's almost like we need some kind of system in our mind where when we get a positive comment, we we give it a score of like 10 or something. Like we process that in a much more powerful way than when we get a negative comment. We need to be able to just almost dismiss them. Skip, delete, not important.
I absolutely love you saying that. I'll just take it back to coaching real quickly. When you change, so let's say you want to release this business post, for example. You're overthinking it. You've probably wanted to release it last week, but for whatever reason you didn't. You're nervous. Will people like this? How's it going to be received? You're in a very, very vulnerable state. And in coaching and sports, we see guys who can't understand something and they feel confused, angry. Sometimes they can feel stupid, less than. So we encourage and compliment and get them to slow down. And that can take weeks of positive reinforcement to get them comfortable, to get the technique. One wrong word in that week can be irreversible. Irreversible. It's human nature. So when you release your course, you may have 100 comments saying, oh, I can't wait to do this. This is going to be brilliant. And then one person may say, I follow you because of your art teaching. And now I'm leaving because you're going somewhere else. And because of your vulnerable state, that can be devastating to you. And when you talk to other people outside of this, they don't get it. They don't. It's just one comment. What are you talking about? There's 100 comments that are telling you you're awesome. Why are you fixating on this one comment? Like, it's easy to talk about this, but this is something you have to go through. You have to make peace with yourself about this. This is something you have to grow into.
We almost need one of those mindfulness prompts when we go to comment. Breathe. Have a think about what you're saying. Because sometimes people say things and they don't mean to be as negative as the person perceives it. But this is a sensitive topic when you are changing. It's very vulnerable. So if someone makes a comment and just says, I really loved what you did before. You know, I'm not so sure about this new direction.
I like the way you put your beautifulness into that comment. I liked what you did before. The comment would not read like that.
My nasty comments are very nasty. I was like, Laura, come on, find some inner.
It's not what
inner troll.
It's like, ugh, you know?
It's like,
yeah, that's how the comment will start. Ugh, you know? Never liked you in the first place. Don't unfollow, you know, that kind of crap.
Yeah. Another thing that might be helpful to think about is how you are going to respond to some of the more likely negative comments. Because if we are a little bit more mentally prepared for them, they're much easier to cope with. Now, we get some negative comments around things, particularly in relation to pricing of classes, and pricing in US dollars is something that comes up all the time because we are in Australia, but we price all our classes in US dollars. And we do that because we have a very global audience and US dollars is the most recognized currency out there. Simple answer. It helps to have a simple answer and to know what you are going to say. Because when these comments come up, I read them and I know how I'm going to respond to them, and they barely affect my emotional estate whatsoever. Now, the first couple probably did.
Do you remember the first one I answered? I wrote this big, long explanation to this lady, and the email that came back was so abrupt and rude. It like blew me off my chair, and it made me angry and resentful. I was like, okay, that's it. From now on, I'm only saying it's in US dollars, full stop. And I've never had an issue. I don't do those emails anymore.
Maybe that's why.
But yeah, I went out of my way to try and explain to this person why we do this and all that kind of stuff. And there was nothing I could have done that could have made that email any better.
Well, here's a tip as well. Your explanation for the things that you think people might comment about is probably twice as long as it needs to be. Because you don't owe a massive explanation on why you've changed your art or why you price something a certain way. So you need to think about it as, how am I going to respond to this in a way that is quick, efficient, polite, to the point, and move on? And if you have that in mind, you're going to just cruise through this phase, particularly this more volatile phase when the transition is happening, because, as I said, things get easier. But maybe if you've only just made an announcement about something, anticipate a few nasty comments. I think it helps. I mean, maybe I'm being negative, but I think it actually helps to anticipate and have a bit of a planned response to a little bit of pushback that you might have against something.
Yeah, and the great thing about you is that you're super polite and super understanding, yet very firm. And it's the emails that you get answered are, oh yeah, sorry, I didn't know that, or like, yeah, you're better at it than me.
Is that why you don't do it anymore? We took Richie off the emails.
Look, I'm a delete block kind of person. You know, I'm trying to instill that into Sophia.
What did I used to say to you? I'm an educate, don't aggravate. That was that was a little mantra that I gave you.
I'm a walking aggravation.
I'd say to you, now you can respond to this. Now educate, don't aggravate, Richie.
Yeah. And I remember, like, you'd be looking when we had the same, when we shared the same desk, like, you'd see my face drop. You'd be like, don't, what are you doing? And like, the keys would be going tap, 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 tap.
I don't like the sound of those key taps.
I don't like the sound of that. And then you'd come around and say, no, I'll deal with this one. But look, I'm just saying, you know, you deal with it really, really well. And I used to see you do it in markets. Like, we'd be standing, because I'm a people pleaser. And we'd be at the market and someone would come up and they'd be like, oh, they're a bit expensive. And the first thought through my brain would be, right, maybe I should do a deal with this person. And I'm thinking about haggling and bartering. And then you would come back. The only reason I was covering was because you were at the toilet or you were going to get a coffee. And you would come back with your coffee, all smiles. And the lady would say, yeah, I was just talking to your husband about this painting. And I was just saying it's a bit expensive. And you just go, no, let's say it's 100 bucks. You're like, oh, it's 100 bucks. And then you would turn and serve someone else. I'm like, that's how you do it. And I never see you in a situation where you have to be firm or tough. I'm like, oh, I like this version of Laura, you know? Like, yeah, I think it's really, really good. And you like that when it comes to comments and emails. You don't get emotionally involved. Maybe you do in your head, but I don't see that. Yeah, I should do more of that because I'm really emotional. It's your art. It's your course. I'm receiving the email to Laura Horn and I'm getting emotionally invested into, I'm getting, what would you call it? I'm getting outraged on your behalf.
Yeah, often I would have to calm you down.
Yeah.
About something. And I'd be like, fine about it.
So, yeah. And you're looking at me like, are you okay?
Do you need to take a few deep breaths?
I must be a psycho. I was about to say I'm not like that anymore, but I don't do those emails anymore. So.
Well, it's a simple thing and we get taught it when we are growing up, but I do try as much as possible to put myself in the person's shoes. Like, I try and just for a moment imagine how they are experiencing this. And, you know, for something like a pricing thing where it's in US dollars and they thought it was going to be in Australian dollars, it's a big jump in what they thought the price was. Now, I set my prices based on American dollars. So if I was to offer it in Australian dollars, it would be a higher price. It wouldn't be that price in Australian dollars. But some people don't understand that's the thinking behind it. And so they're disappointed because it's not what they expected. And just taking that moment to step into their shoes, just for a moment, and feel the feeling that they are feeling, that will help you to respond in a way that is understanding of their perspective. But then the flip side of that is that you remain firm and educate a little bit around what your reasoning is. And you don't need to educate a lot. as I said, you don't need an essay about why your price is this. This could be a price in relation to a painting. You don't even need to explain. As you say, you can do what I said at markets and things. This is the price. You know, this is the price. This is based on the work that I put into it. And it's as simple as that.
And just coming back to that, being an art teacher and then going from teaching art to teaching business, there's obviously a main reason for that. And that reason may be that you're not making the kind of money you need to be making, not want to be making, but need to be making to keep that art teaching business going forwards, where the business teaching may give you the financial boost that you need to continue doing what you want to do. Because it's a very real thing. Like, do you want to stop doing what you're doing and then go back into the workforce? Or do you want to continue in the art space and the creative space and just take a turn somewhere else so you can continue to be a full-time creative? So there's also the fear around, is this going to cost me money? And that's a massive fear.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you've brought that up, because sometimes we talk about change as in we want to change styles because of our passion. This is what we really want. But sometimes we are changing things because of financial reasons. We are changing art styles because what we are making isn't selling. Or we might be changing at the focus of our business because it's not profitable doing what we are doing. So we are looking at a different angle. And these are valid concerns. And equally, we might be doing something that is profitable and want to make a change and then worry that the change won't be profitable. So it can work both ways. But either way, financials are a concern. There are going to be periods of instability when you make a change. So the example of where you are making a change because you want to boost your income. So let's take the example you mentioned of you've been teaching art classes maybe on a small scale and you realize that what you want to do is offer a higher ticket option. So it's a class that perhaps teaches people how to make money as an artist, because anything that teaches people how to make money is something that usually you can offer at a higher price because people get a return on it. So let's say you want to shift into that. So for us, even if we were considering doing a course like that, you know, we would be teaching people how to make online classes, how to set up sales pages, how to use sales funnels, how to do email marketing, how to do social media, and so on. So let's say we decided we wanted to shift into that because our class business teaching people how to make art and selling small mini courses at a low price wasn't doing very well anymore. And this could be a scenario for us. So it's a very real possibility that we would then look at, okay, let's move into another area. The challenge with that is getting people engaged in that idea and then paying that higher amount. There is likely to be a period of time where you are not making the money and it may be less than what you are making in your online class business. So how do we navigate that situation where the change that we are making might be better off in the long run, but it's going to take some time to get there?
You know, here we are talking about balance, and I was talking about having a passion that keeps you sane and then your job that brings the money in. And here we are now talking about a very real life scenario where the job that brings the money in is struggling. And now you have to try and decide whether you move in a different direction. But you have to maintain the job that's bringing the money in as well as create this new form of income that you're hoping is going to surpass the one that's declining. It's just one of those things where you just have to trust the process and trust your gut. And if you start listening to your followers, if you start listening to people who are saying, I'm not buying your business course, and I'm not, you will fall. This is where you really have to put your big girl pants on and say, this is what I want to do. I can see its future. I can see where it's going to take me, and I'm going to do this. And I think it's sometimes we need something like that to force us into ignoring the noise. I think if you don't have that kind of desperation to succeed, you can fall or fail.
Yeah, I feel that is true, because my natural instinct is to try and do both. My natural instinct is, okay, I will try and put my online class business on autopilot as much as possible. I will try and get in some people to help keep it ticking over. I will run Facebook ads and things so that I still have income coming through. The thing that I underestimate is how much mental drain would still happen with me trying to keep that going. And I'd probably be trying to keep it going at full steam. And I would have a hard time letting go of the numbers of people that buy classes at the moment and letting that drop off. I'd be like, oh, I want to keep that going. I want to keep that going. But if I'm spending a lot of time keeping that going, and I probably wouldn't have the gusto and the energy to put into the new thing to really make that work. And as you say, it's almost like sometimes you need this situation that forces you to make a big new thing. Like you lose your job or something and you just don't have any other option but to throw all your energy. And that's often when absolutely amazing things get born. It's really tricky to make this amazing new thing when half of your mind is in the old thing. But at the same time, it's really scary to make this new thing when you don't have any income coming in. It's so hard. I don't even know if I have answers to this, because it's really tricky.
Yeah, and it's almost impossible to give someone advice from here, to sit here on your podcast and pontificate and say, oh, this is what you should do. And it's just one of those things that it's unique to you. It's unique to your situation. It's unique to everything. And you may go all in on one thing and it will fail, you know? And then you'll be devastated and you'll be saying things like, oh, I should have just stuck with my art business. I shouldn't have went into the business teaching side. Or the complete opposite could happen. You let go of the art teaching and you go into the business teaching and it takes off. And then you're saying things like, I should have done that sooner. It's hindsight is just so 20/20. And when you're in this situation, fear, insecure, undecided, confused, it's just impossible to sit here and put my head into that situation. I just think that what I'm trying to say is, if it's something you really want to do, do it.
Yeah, I think you really do have to listen in, because there's going to be something gnawing away at you if there's this thing that you want to do that you're not doing. For us, I don't have that feeling. Like I don't have this feeling all the time that we should be focusing on teaching the behind the scenes of running an art business. It's not gnawing away at me. My passion really still sits in creating art classes. And so even though I know that there is potential income in that and possibilities, it's not guaranteed, but there's options there, I don't have that feeling. But if you did have that feeling, then I think it will continue to just be there in the background and probably would ultimately impact the classes that you are making. As soon as you're not 100% in something, you start to drop off in your enthusiasm, your quality of teaching drops off. So yes, if your heart isn't in it, it's time to start looking at how do you make the change. And as far as income streams, I guess I'd have to have a really good look at what the income streams are. and which ones are the most passive and conducive to being able to put my heart into a new project, because there are some things that don't drain you or take up as much time as other things. And trying to find something that you could continue working on that would support you as you focus on the bigger project. Because we need to keep the spark alive in some way. Like, the death of our art practice or our art business is when we stop feeling enthusiastic or passionate. Things drop off really quickly when we lose the joy, when we lose the excitement. And that happened to us a bit with the podcast when we had been doing it for quite a while. We weren't feeling quite as pumped up about it. And then we took a break, a significant break, and then we've come back and it feels super fun and enjoyable again. In fact, we were thinking about doing fortnightly episodes, but I'm grateful now that we are doing weekly ones, because I'm looking forward each week to sitting down and having these conversations. So yeah, we can't underestimate the importance of feeling excited about what we are doing. It really brings in the personal element, which is why we can't answer these questions for anyone who's at a creative crossroads. There's no path that we can recommend in any of these situations, because it's very personality driven. We have to ask ourselves, do we want to go all in on this business idea? Does that suit our personality? Would we be better off having a bit of both?
Don't put any pressure on yourself to go all in on something that you feel you don't need to. Like my friend's partner that does the markets. She just loves doing them. And everybody looking at her is like, you could be rich from doing this. And she's like, I'm already rich from doing this.
But at the same time, if you have an idea and you are living it, breathing it, it is something that you just dream about every day, you really want it, don't feel discouraged by comments or feedback that you get. That is probably something that is a massive possibility for you, because if you are feeling that way, you're halfway there. You're halfway there, because drive and passion and just the real grit and determination to do something is really a huge part of it, because it's almost like it's a feeling. And if you have that feeling and then you share it and you work hard on it and consistently on it, you are going to engage with new people. You're going to create a different kind of lifestyle for yourself. It's going to be very exciting. Like, there is something amazing out there for anyone who has that level of passion and determination. So if you are feeling it and you've found something that you really want to go all in on, I think sometimes you really do have to make incredible sacrifices along the way and trust and know that it will be worth it in the end. So yes, there are many, many options, different ways that you can move forward, and it's up to us as individuals to really think through what suits us, our way of being, and what we want from our creative life. Well, that was quite a conversation. It went in a lot of twisty directions, but I really hope that everyone has enjoyed it. I also want to say a big thank you to everyone who has been sharing the podcast. We received some beautiful reviews this week. They really touched my heart and encouraged us to keep on having these open conversations. One of the reviews talked about how the person loved this podcast because it isn't just about art. It is about juggling family. It's about finding purpose. And I absolutely loved that. And it fuels us to keep on just showing up each week and talking about whatever is on our mind. So thank you very much to everyone who shares stories and leaves reviews. And if you want to find out more about our art business and some of the things that we talked about in this podcast, the best place to go is over to my website, laurahornart.com, or else you can find me on Instagram at laurahornart.